the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. You get to set the agenda, whatever's on your mind, whatever is in conversation in your family, your workplace, your circle of friends. This is the time to raise it for all America. We're going to talk about what's on your mind. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I like this day right at the middle of the week because we get to cover the waterfront, everything from the Bible and culture and theology to, well, you name it. We'll see where we go from here. First, a review of the news. The Christian Medical and Dental Association has come out with a very clear statement countering the AMA, that's the American Medical Association, on abortion and conscience. The big issue here is, of course, what we've been talking about already. We've been tracking the story of how pharmacists in certain places are being pressured to be required to dispense, that is, the morning after pill and emergency contraceptives, whether or not it violates their conscience. And, for instance, in Illinois, Governor Blagojevich has ruled in an emergency order that pharmacists must dispense emergency contraceptives and has basically said that this right to conscience is now being denied pharmacists. Now, let's just remind ourselves that physicians and nurses and other medical professionals have this well-established right of conscience, but not pharmacists. But now the Christian Medical and Dental Association has come out with a very clear statement, and let me just quote here from Executive Director Dr. Gene Rudd, who said, there is simply no reason to trample over the consciences of pharmacists to fill these prescriptions. This is often framed as a matter of patient rights and access to health care when it is, in fact, an issue of patient convenience. Patient convenience is a good goal, but it cannot trump fundamental rights of conscience. It is clear that abortion advocates will not tolerate anyone who opposes their doctrine. It is ironic that while they appeal to principles of freedom of choice, abortion advocates are willing to eliminate the choice of those who hold opposing views. A good statement from the Christian Medical and Dental Associations, and timely as well. You may know that in Canada, there is now a major development as the same-sex marriage bill has now passed through the Canadian Parliament, and it looks like with the House of Commons voting to adopt constitutional legislation that will make Canada the third country in the world to legalize same-sex marriage, our northern neighbor is well on its way to normalizing homosexual relationships and giving them the right of marriage. This is about the Charter of Rights, said Prime Minister Paul Martin. We are a nation of minorities, and in a nation of minorities, it is important that you don't cherry-pick rights. A right is a right, and that's what this vote tonight is all about, end quote. Now, ladies and gentlemen, from politicians, you just have to assume some expectation of nonsense. But rarely has so much nonsense been packaged and packed into such tight space of language as in the Canadian Prime Minister's statement here. We're a nation of minorities. Well, I guess in some sense you can define almost anybody as a nation of minorities, depending on what kind of minority you're going to mention. Is it racial? Is it ethnic? Is it political, religious? You name it. And in a nation of minorities, he said, it is important that you don't cherry-pick rights. Well, that's interesting, but that says nothing. What in the world does that mean? There are all kinds of rights asserted. Every single nation decides which rights or claimed rights it's going to recognize. No civilization recognizes every claim to a right as legitimate. In other words, every government cherry-picks rights. That's what the government of Canada is paid for. And he goes on and says, a right is a right, and that's what this vote tonight is all about. You know, that's just a long way from the kind of constitutional theorizing and responsible political judgment that you would expect from one who holds the highest governmental office of his country. A right is a right, and that's what this vote tonight is all about. Well, listen, this right has never been recognized in human history as a right until just recently. And in most places in the world, it's still not recognized as a right. And simply declaring that a right is a right doesn't make it a right, Mr. Prime Minister, and we'll be watching to see what happens in Canada. But this is bad news, and it's another reminder to us that we as a nation are not an island. And in particular, even in terms of geography, we are a part of the North American continent, and this means that our northern neighbor is now going to have normalized same-sex marriage. And you can only imagine this will add to the momentum for calls for same-sex marriage in this country as well. What should we think about the emerging church? That is an ongoing conversation, something very important for evangelicals in particular, because this movement poses a very real challenge to our understanding. And if you have not heard of the emerging church, you must be living on some kind of cave that you're sequestered away from the evangelical conversation, because if you're reading the magazines, if you're reading the books, if you're watching what's happening, especially among many younger evangelicals, you're going to come into contact with this idea of an emerging church. Now, we've talked about it on this program before. I think much of it is a mood. It's really about setting a mood. It's about cultural engagement. It's about disengaging from a culture that is understood to be passing. And it's about engaging with a new culture that that represents undeniably a very real missiological challenge, a real challenge to the church in terms of communicating and presenting the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ. But the real question is whether or not this is a movement that will reform the church or reform the evangelical movement itself, or whether it is instead a trajectory that will lead to the denial of biblical truth. And those are really the only important questions, I think, about this movement. We should not be overly concerned about style. We should be looking at the issue of substance. And that's where I believe we are in big trouble with this new movement. And that's why, even as I will acknowledge that there are many people who identify themselves with the movement who do not hold to all the aberrant theological proposals of some of the leaders, nonetheless, a movement is known by its most influential leaders. That's just the way it's going to be. And so those connected with this program and with the movement who say, that's not me, well, it's going to be up to them to show that's not what they believe. But when you look at the denial of absolute truth, when you look at the denial of propositional truth, when you look at the number of doctrines that so many of these leaders are simply willing to forfeit, we're in big trouble. When you look at how casually they simply dismiss an idea like the substitutionary atonement of the Lord Jesus Christ, and when you look at how they keep changing the vocabulary in such a way as to say doctrine is really a regulative function within the church in terms of a narrative structure, it's not propositional truth, it's really just true or false, and we must believe it. This is an ongoing conversation, and on my website at Albert Moeller, that's Albert, M-O-H-L-E-R.com, I post an article today. That's the commentary you'll find at the top of the page. It's part one today. Part two is coming tomorrow, and I promise you this will be an ongoing conversation. We're going to invite some of the leaders of this movement on the program in weeks to come, and we're going to pledge right now that we're going to track this conversation as a way of providing some leadership for Christians to think through the challenge of the emerging church. No doubt you've heard about Edward Klein's book, The Truth About Hillary. And there are conservative talk shows that are all excited about this. There are people that are rabidly ready to read the book in order to get all the dirt on Hillary. Let me suggest to you that that is exactly what we must not do. First, because we believe that we're morally obligated as Christians to tell the truth, to honor the truth, and to respect the truth. And a quick look at this book is enough to reveal the lack of documentation and sourcing that would justify the charges and supposed revelations. Rumor is no substitute for evidence, and unnamed sources that dish out personal dirt are morally reprehensible, and they're worthless in terms of credibility. Second, and I argue that Christians must be particularly concerned about this, taking pleasure in this book will divert our attention from what really matters, the battle of ideas and the hard work of intellectual engagement. We need to direct our energies to engaging the policies, proposals, and the ideological commitments represented by Hillary Clinton, not to dirt-throwing contests over scandals without evidence. Third, we know that character really does matter, and this means that the character of those on both sides of a political contest will matter. They will come out. We'll know where the character is. Those who oppose Hillary Clinton's policies and ideas will reveal their true character by focusing on the policies and on the ideas, not on scandalous rumors. Inevitably, character will reveal itself, especially in the crucible of a heated political contest. But there's an even more important issue at stake here. As Christians, we are not to take pleasure in the real or imagined wrongdoing of others. We must not give ourselves permission to read a book that will encourage us to feel morally superior about ourselves, even as it poisons our heart against someone seen as a threat to what we cherish. You know, there's a lot of reading to be done out there this summer. There are a lot of books to read. As the slogan goes, so many books, so little time. Don't waste your time and don't tempt your heart by reading the book, The Truth About Hillary. Folks, we're going to talk today about what's on your mind. We've had some interesting questions come in by email. And, of course, we have a continuing conversation of issues that have been front burner concerns as Christians are trying to think through the issues of the day. We've been tracking the delay of marriage. A report out of London indicates that British young men are now marrying at a low rate, so low that you have to go back to the height of World War II in order to find a similar time. The Times reports that the British nation is turning into a bachelor nation. Young men living like irresponsible teenagers, unwilling to commit and unwilling to connect. This is extended male adolescence all over again. And we as Christians understand that it's not just a sociological matter. It's a matter of theological and spiritual accountability as well. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. The phone number 877-893-8255. The next question could be yours. I'm Albert Moeller. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. It is Ask Anything Wednesday, and the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to go to Ryan, listening on XM Satellite Radio, calling from Columbia, South Carolina. Ryan, it's your turn.
Hi, Dr. Moeller. I was listening to your program yesterday about the BTK killer, and there was something that you mentioned and referred to as the restraining grace of God, that there is evil in the world that God prevents from occurring through his grace. And I was wondering if you could possibly explain that some further.
Yeah, Ryan, you know, that's a good question. And it's one of those big issues that's kind of hard to even discuss in the confines of a conversation of just a few minutes. But let me just tell you that the Christian understanding of how God relates to the world, the very understanding we get from the Bible, is that God is sovereign over all creation and he's working out his purposes. That purpose is not inconsistent with the gift of free agency that he has given human beings. And yet, human beings do not have free rein to do all the sin we might contemplate. In other words, there are some means, first of all, that are not even at our disposal. There are people that, if they had such means, would use them. You know, all you have to do is look in the Bible where you see God, for instance, restraining the hand of the one who would do evil. And you start realizing that God is not going to allow his purposes to be thwarted by human evil set absolutely loose. And Ryan, let me be real clear about that. Let's just imagine that instead of thinking about the entire globe, let's just think about one neighborhood. And let's just turn everyone in that neighborhood absolutely loose to do every evil thing they might contemplate or desire to do. Let's take away God's restraining grace of conscience. Let's take away God's restraining grace of law. Let's take away God's restraining grace as indicated in the existence of authority, such as police and all the rest. And let's just set them loose so that they're no longer limited by conscience, they're no longer limited by law, and they can do whatever their impulses may lead them to do. Well, in short order, everybody's dead. That's the bottom line. Every bad thing that could happen does happen. And so I would say, first of all, that God restrains evil through first of all, his active rule in his creation to accomplish his own purposes by intervening, as a matter of fact, in human affairs at times. It's unknown to us and unknown to us to limit the effects of evil. He limits the effect of evil by implanting within us the capacity of conscience and by the institution of law, both in terms of his own law revealed in nature and in his word, and in the law as constructed by men on that human authority and then employed and enforced by agents of the law, such as the police and judges and all the rest. Ryan, does that make any sense?
Yes.
That's a good question. And I think it's something that most of us don't think about. You know, it's one of those things that you don't have to think about until you look at a situation like the murders in Wichita, Kansas, and you realize, you know, this could happen anywhere. Why doesn't it happen everywhere? And let's be thankful that, just to take one aspect of this, let's be thankful that God has made us moral creatures and has implanted within us conscience as a restraining power. Paul makes very clear in Romans chapter 2 that given the effects of sin, we can no longer trust our conscience to be absolutely trustworthy. We can even contort our conscience. That's what you saw evidence yesterday with the BTK murderer. But let's be thankful that that it's not fully unoperative. Otherwise, we'd be in even bigger trouble. Let's go to Eric calling from North Platte, Nebraska, listening on the web. Eric, welcome to the Albert Moeller Program.
How you doing, Dr. Moeller?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you there.
Good. I'm a Canadian citizen, and unfortunately, Bill C-38 going through last night isn't much of a surprise because the church didn't really step up to the plate that it should, like they did in the States here. At what point should the evangelical church now speak out against this bill and the churches that would seek to use it as ammunition to have it apply to the clergy? Because right now it only applies to civil offices and public places.
Yeah, you know, Eric, that's a very good question, and I'm glad to hear from a Canadian citizen on this. And perhaps a little bit of background would help most of our listeners to kind of understand what's going on. A major editorial that came out yesterday was indicating that, with pride, as a matter of fact, from a Canadian perspective, that we're really, as a nation, they said, moving to associate more with Europe and with European culture and with the European moral revolution rather than with America. This is one representation of that. The lead story in the Vancouver Sun today says this: after years of debate across the country, a federal election, a reference to the Supreme Court of Canada, and a court decision in eight provinces and one territory, listen to these words, Canada has finally become the third country after Belgium and the Netherlands to legalize same-sex marriage. With the passage of Bill C-38, Canada is now well on its way. It's now just an absolute legal fact that same-sex marriage is going to be normalized. Now, Eric, I raised the question, you know, where were the evangelical churches? Well, a lot of Americans just kind of assume that Canada is like America, just further north. But the church culture in Canada is very different than what you find here. And for some good historical reasons that are understandable, I say good in terms of being valid, not good in terms of being positive. But there really is a very little in terms of an evangelical movement as compared to what you have in the U.S., at least in terms of political influence. But, of course, there are very many Christians in Canada. There are wonderful conservative Christians who are committed to the Bible. And, yes, Eric, I must say they have to speak out on this. They can't go along. This is an issue in which the church is going to have to draw the line and say we cannot go with Caesar when Caesar declares marriage to be this, the union of a man and a man or a woman and a woman. And it's going to be tight. It's going to be difficult. It's going to be controversial. And given the structure of the Canadian law, I think there are churches that may lose their property, they may lose their standing, they may put their ministries at risk. But what would be the cost of not speaking out on this issue? Eric, where do you think this is going to go in Canada? I mean, do you think this is going to just be a further move of Canada in a more European direction on other issues as well?
I think so, because we were founded upon British society, British government. We weren't founded upon an independent declaration as the states was. And unfortunately, there was a lot of more liberal mainline churches that were in support of this legislation, and they actually wanted it to affect the clergy.
Yeah.
I feel the evangelical church, they would say prayers, but there was no outspoken request to contact your local members of parliament to speak out on the issue. And Focus on the Family was really driving for that, but it just didn't seem to happen. And what
right.
I'm afraid is that they will target the more evangelical churches now by using precedents from the New Westminster diocese of the Anglican
That's
Church
right.
and United Church, saying, look, they're doing it. You have to do it. I'm a gay person. I have rights now. And I'm going to sue you now because you're not going to do it unlike these Christians are.
Yeah, Eric, I think you got the logic of where they're headed here. Let me tell you, I was in a meeting not too long ago in which a Canadian historian, it was a small group of scholars of which I was a part, and this Canadian historian was really kind of giving us a history of religion and especially Christianity in Canada. It was absolutely fascinating. And she said, for instance, you have to remember that this was a nation that had no Puritan movement and no Great Awakening. And so there never was the kind of culture-shaping event that was deeply grounded in Christian truth that that really helped the nation to establish its moral and Christian groundings. And, you know, you're exactly right, Eric. There is a British background. But, of course, when you look at Quebec, you're also talking about a French background. And so there's a lot going on here. And I think it is just absolutely true, fair and accurate to say that Canada is now really associating more as a European culture rather than associating with the United States. And that's just going to make it more difficult here in the 50 states of the United States of America to hold fast on these issues. Eric also reminds us that we need to pray for Christians in other places. We need to pray especially for evangelicals and evangelical churches in Canada. We need to pray for groups like Focus on the Family Canada that are trying to really help give witness to a Christian understanding of marriage. And we know that sooner or later, it's going to come right where we are. That's the way it looks, folks. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. You get to set the agenda, and the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. From Louisville, Kentucky, I'm Albert Mohler.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
You just never know where we're going to go on Ask Anything Wednesday. And the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're going to talk about what's on your mind. And first, we're going to go to John, listening on XM Satellite Radio in Atlanta, Georgia. John, welcome.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mohler. How are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to hear from you.
Great. Great to be on the show. I had a question I wanted to hear from you on. I was a listener in an interesting conversation recently in a group of church friends, where there was quickly a difference of opinion regarding what we allow our children to be exposed to in the movies. And this really centered around science fiction or fantasy movies, where there was one side of opinion that said the betrayal of evil was far too much for them to be able to accept as a Christian. And the other side of the story was, this is pure fantasy. This is comic book. It's fictional, and it's harmless. I'd be interested to hear your take on that and what foundation should be applied where Christian parents are concerned in what we allow our children to see in movies.
John, boy, that is a great question. It's one we're going to take up, especially with the new Harry Potter book coming out in just a couple of weeks, and with another Harry Potter film coming, and, of course, the Star Wars films and all the rest. We're continually surrounded by it. But, you know, the issue gets a lot more complex when you look deeper into the fall season and you recognize that Philip Anschutz's series, the produced Chronicles of Narnia by C.S. Lewis, is going to be coming out, a very powerful thing released by the Disney Corporation. And so I think there are going to be Christians trying to think through these issues. John, you ask a good question. I'm going to try to answer it succinctly. But I got to say right up front, this is going to have to be a continuing conversation as well. You know, I think that the issue of fantasy, first of all, has to be preceded by the question of fiction. You see, I think there's some Christians who are awkward about the whole literary category of fiction. Because in some sense, it's a lie, right? I mean, when you say there was this person and he did this and they didn't do it, it is, at least in print, a lie. It's not true. But we understand that there is an entire category of fiction that is not a lie, because it's not intended to convey a claim that this actually happened in this way. Instead, it is telling a story and it's trying to convey some meaning. Now, that doesn't mean that fiction is thus outside of moral scrutiny. It just means that the moment you begin to write in fiction, a different set of rules applies. And when you come to the genre or the category of fantasy, it's just more or less a more complex question of the same thing about fiction. Let me tell you, I think Christians are fully free to read and to enjoy fiction. I'm planning to take for my summer trip several novels that I've been waiting to read. And, you know, when it comes to the fantasy thing, I have to say, as a teenager, I was not really into that stuff. As an adult, I have found it more interesting because of the work I do in cultural criticism, and I actually see that there's something there. I read the Lord of the Rings trilogy as a teenager, and I didn't get a whole lot out of it, to tell you the truth. A lot of my friends were just all abuzz about it, and I just didn't really connect with it. I wanted to read history and biography and all the rest, but, you know, I went back and read it later in life and found it a much more powerful thing. I guess just at a different stage of life, I was able to connect to it. You know, I don't think there is a clear line on this, John, other than to say that I think one of the important functions of honest fiction is to portray evil honestly. And I think that it is the worldview behind it and the analysis that we can bring to it that's really important. For instance, the movie about Hannibal Lecter. In terms of the Silence of the Lambs, I didn't see it, I wouldn't see it, just because I don't think it could be possibly spiritually edifying for me to see that, because I think the moral context is just nihilism, in which there's really no good and evil, and it's just a macabre fascination with evil, and I wouldn't do it. But there are other films, there are other novels that I would both see and read that would deal with evil, but would deal with evil honestly and in a way that has a moral context. I think the hardest question comes with some of these films, and in particular, I think a lot of Christian parents are deeply conflicted over things like the Harry Potter series, because in that case, you've got something in which it's not really so much evil. It's because there is no deep, dark evil in this. There is violence, yes, but it's not tied to any great big moral framework. The question is about the occult and supernatural and witchcraft and all the rest. And, you know, even then, I think Christians can engage those stories but they have to do so with real maturity, and I wouldn't let my children either read them or watch them without me accompanying them through that process and guiding them through the discipline of thinking about these things as Christians. And I think also parents have to make individual decisions. We have to take responsibility to know our children and to guard their hearts and to help them move towards maturity. And I think even within a family, there's some kids that can do well with this and some kids that probably can't. John, I want you to hold on with me through this break because I think we want to pick up on this issue when we come back. It's Ask Anything Wednesday, the number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Live from Louisville, Kentucky, this is the Albert Mohler Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. When we left off, we were talking with John about the issue of fantasy literature and movies with fantasy themes and formats and how parents should think about this with their kids. John, did the conversation I tried to lay out make any sense?
Yes, it made perfect sense to me.
Well, when you think about this, you know, are you a parent?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so how right now are you thinking this issue through? In other words, what's the kind of grid you're working with? I don't know if you have a son or a daughter who's interested in reading these books or seeing these films.
I actually have both. I have a son and a daughter, and I grew up as a child loving the science fiction and fantasy themes. I was a big fan of the Star Wars movies, and I don't believe at any time my parents ever shared a concern that I was going to someday grow up to idolize or become like any of the evil characters that were portrayed in these movies. I love them purely for the excitement of the characters and the storylines. And I guess I've used a lot of my own personal experience when it comes to exposing my own kids today to these films. Yeah. My son loves these same films, and I never saw an inherent danger in them.
Yeah, you know, John, I think that's probably an assumption held by a lot of parents as well. And I think given the kind of things you're talking about, that's probably fully justified. And, you know, that's why I don't want to break glass in case of emergency and just tell people don't read this. To the contrary, I want to say I think it's great that kids are reading. We need to encourage that. If they want to read some of this literature, then read it with them. Talk it through with them and all the rest. I think the one caveat, the one warning I would issue is that, you know, John, I'm not sure how old you are, but, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, and I can tell you the world's changed a whole lot since I could walk pretty safely in a bookstore at age, you know, 13 or 14. And I think there's some really awful stuff out there. Let me give you one set of fantasy books you must protect your children from reading. It's the series His Dark Materials by the author Philip Pullman. And as a matter of fact, we may do an entire program on that later this summer because that's a trilogy in which this guy's kind of C.S. Lewis in reverse. Rather than using fantasy literature in order to help to construct a Christian worldview, Philip Pullman is, in His Dark Materials, that's the name of the trilogy, really seeking to undercut and to destroy the Christian worldview. And I think it's important you know that. That's why, again, with all this stuff, I really think parents and kids need to read together. I think that's a fantastic thing. I don't mean you have to sit beside each other reading the same page. But you ought to read the same literature, read the same books, go with them. It'll be a great experience, not only the kind of bonding, but you'll really help them to grow to maturity in terms of thinking with a Christian worldview. Thanks for your call, John. Let's go to Rob calling from Saginaw, Michigan, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I want to tell you, your program is an absolute breath of fresh air.
Well, thank you.
I absolutely love it.
Well, I really appreciate your calling, Rob. What's on your mind?
Earlier, you were talking about the Canadian gay marriage law. And I'm kind of curious of what your thoughts are. Do you think eventually we're going to get pushed from both sides on this issue, the liberals who already favor it and the libertarians who will basically adopt the attitude of let them do whatever they want, and then the Christians are going to be left out in the cold? Is that a possibility?
You know, Rob, it's more than a possibility. I think it's a real and present danger. And the one of the words you use there is really important. You know, I think most conservatives know that the liberals are pushing for same-sex marriage. You just understand because of their redefinition of life in terms of personal autonomy and unfettered freedom, that's where they basically are. And also their embrace of homosexuality is a valid lifestyle. But the libertarian word, that's the one I want to zero in on, because a lot of conservatives just assume that everyone who says, I'm conservative, is operating out of the same worldview. And, you know, the libertarians really are not. All you have to do is look at their periodicals, read their books, And they believe that government really should have no role in terms of regulating human sexual behavior at all. And, of course, that means no federal marriage amendment. That means no laws against any number of sexual practices. And no laws normalizing one moral claim of heterosexual marriage over others. You know, I think there's even an added dimension to this, and that is the corporate angle, because, you know, a lot of cultural conservatives think, well, you know, big business is with us on tax issues and the economic issues and all the rest. We'll wait and see where that diverges when a set of priorities comes up. The Wall Street Journal just this week had a very interesting story about the Supreme Court and why corporate interests are now really more interested in their priorities, and they're afraid that the social conservative agenda, issues of life and death and abortion and human embryonic stem cell research and same-sex marriage, may distract the government from their priorities. We're going to have to watch this. This is why eternal vigilance is really called for, at least in our lifetimes, constant vigilance. And we're just going to have to be very careful. I will say this, Rob. I think that that right now there is among the American people the residue of a Christian worldview sufficient that most of them, if they had the opportunity, would vote the right way. We see that whenever it's come up in a state constitutional amendment. The question is whether there's enough time and enough political will to deal with this while that basic confidence and moral knowledge of the American people is still intact. God bless you for your call from Saginaw, Michigan, Rob. We're glad to hear from you. Let's go to Russ calling from Houston, Texas, listening on the web. Russ, go right ahead.
How you doing, Dr. Mueller?
I'm doing great. Glad to hear from you.
You know, I'm a pretty big fan of science fiction, like a lot of people are, but I actually had a buddy that called me up a few minutes ago, and he was wanting to see if I wanted to go see that War of the Worlds. But to tell you the truth, I've just really, really have just a bad taste about how Tom Cruise and all of Scientology, and I just don't really have any desire at all to see it. And I just wanted to know what your viewpoint on that is and how we as Christians should, you know, try to talk to our other friends about it. Should we not support this movie or what?
Yeah, you know, Russ, that's a fun question, and I want to tell you why it's fun. It's because it draws out some things that we normally don't even get to talk about. Let me give you an example. And I don't know a whole lot about the movie. I've seen the trailer for the movie, and I don't even know what his rating is. I don't know what we have to deal with in terms of language and all the rest. But, you know, the story, The War of the Worlds, is a science fiction classic that really is important. It's an important part of the literary canon, the literary heritage of America and the English language. And so I hope it's a good movie. When I go see it, even though it has a nut as its star, a cult-following, cult-devoted nut, and after the interview with Matt Lauer that Mr. Cruise did, there's just no doubt that he is he's just a little unhinged from reality here. Not so much in terms of what he said about psychology necessarily, because on some of that, from a completely different perspective, I agree with much of what he had to say. It was the weird worldview that it all seemed to come out of. But I'll tell you this, I absolutely find Alec Baldwin's politics reprehensible. I just can't imagine doing anything to further his career. But, you know, every once in a while, I just have to rewatch The Hunt for Red October because it's just a good movie. And so at some point, I think we have to divorce, in terms of our minds, the actor from the part and the actor from the movie. I wouldn't do anything intentionally to put a dollar in Tom Cruise's pocket for him to give it to the Scientologists and all the rest. But, you know, in terms of our engagement with the culture, at times you have to disengage. I find Vanessa Redgrave's politics reprehensible. But, you know, she's really had some outstanding parts. I still want Alec Baldwin's character to get on that sub in The Hunt for Red October. I just don't want Alec Baldwin to have any voice in the direction our culture is taking. I'll be right back with some final thoughts. This has been a fun conversation, and you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, it's kind of fun to look at issues of entertainment in the Christian worldview today. And the summer kind of brings that on with the release of so many big movies and with people looking to go to the beach and take a book. And, well, on some days as hot as this one, at least, in Louisville, Kentucky, being inside reading a book seems like a pretty good idea. But what are you going to read? How are you going to choose? The whole issue about fantasy literature and fiction came up earlier in our conversation today, and we're going to supply a link on the webpage that I think you may want to find. It is an article from the blog Between Two Worlds. It's written by my friend Justin Taylor, who's a very fine Christian thinker from Minneapolis. He wrote an article entitled, Why Do We Need Fairy Tales and Fantasy? And he drew it from the book Fairy Gold, Treasures from the Lands of Enchantment by Carolyn Linscoog and Renelda Mac Hunsicker. And they gave seven reasons why fantasy is important to the Christian worldview. Here's number one. They stimulate imagination and creativity. Two, they help readers empathize with others and develop compassion. Three, they carry readers beyond the restrictions of time and space and promote a sense of mystery and transcendence. Four, they satisfy the innate desire for communion with other living things. Five, they show how the small and powerless can triumph through perseverance and patience. Six, they awaken higher ideals without preaching. And seven, they help readers envision a better society where intelligence, courage, and compassion prevail. Well, you know what? At its very best, that's what that literature does. The other side of that is, at its very worst, it debases the very values and ideas and virtues that we hold dear. That's why you have to be careful. You know you have to be careful if you're walking in a dangerous place. If you're swimming with the sharks or if you're walking in the wilderness, you know to be looking out for snakes. But when you walk in the bookstore, you better be similarly careful. You better be watching. And especially if you take your kids in there, you better understand you're taking them into an ideological and cultural jungle. There's no telling what they're likely to pick up or what's likely to bite them. Don't be afraid. Teach them how to be mature. The same way you don't want your kid to be afraid to go into the woods, you want to show them how to walk in the woods without getting bitten, without getting lost. Take them in a bookstore. Help them to understand how to navigate. What are you looking for? How do you make judgments? What kind of book should you read? What kind of book should you leave aside? What brings out the best in us? What would bring out the worst? The same thing in the cinema. You know, I believe that that one of the most powerful cultural shaping influences in America today is Hollywood. A lot of what they put out doesn't deserve our interest, much less our support and our money. But some of it is very different. And, you know, in terms of a cultural engagement, there's a real challenge there. But again, the same way that you wouldn't set your kid loose in the ocean, don't set him loose in the cinema, not by any means. You know, back in the last centuries, especially the 18th and 19th centuries, most Christian homes had two books. If they didn't have anything else, they had the Bible and Pilgrim's Progress. That's how important literature has been to Christians as well. Folks, read well, watch well, think well. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.